Access number 27268, Mr. Dennis Reed, Reel 5. Now, before we go on, we have now got out your parchment, and we've got the new date, the dates as they were. And it's we got them slightly wrong. You enlisted in November 1940, and you're at Chatham until October 1941, nearly a year, with the training and then the period waiting for a posting. And then you joined the Royal Sovereign in October 1941, and you actually stayed through to May 44 with it, which is an awful long time. But that's a long time from where we are now. Now, we're talking about when you joined, and we've discussed what you did in the 15-inch gun, where you were captain of the gun, the left gun, I think, right-hand gun. Now, if we have a look at a bit other sides of it, what were your first impressions of your mess deck, and could you describe what the mess deck was like? Because people can't, I mean, there's none of these battleships hardly in existence now. They can't imagine. Could you give us an idea what it was like?
What a mess deck is like?
Just describe it for us.
Well, the Royal Marine Detachment, I'm not referring to the Matlows or the Seamen, the Marines. First and foremost, that is known as the barracks. A mess deck consists, I'm going from memory now, would be approximately about 8 or 9 messes. Now, a mess is a wooden table that is fixed one end to the ship's side, suspended the other end, the inboard end, by a hanging down metal bracket, which obviously makes a table there of approximately the average height of what? 2 foot, 2 foot six, which is the average height. On that, there would be upwards of 12 to 18 men living. That would be known as their mess. Whatever number it may be, that is their mess. At the one end, the inboard end of the mess, would be all the paraphernalia appertaining to the mess, which would be a bread locker, a metal fanny, a large ladle, and that would be the official instruments. The mess fanny would be used for one purpose and one purpose only, for the collection and distribution of the rum. Under no circumstances would it be used for anything else like water, soup, or whatever. If we wanted soup, well then you would have acquired a second fanny. By one means or another, you would have acquired it. Probably nicked it from the next mess, but nevertheless. Now, there will be one man appointed to be the cook. It's his responsibility to go to the galley and collect the food, breakfast, dinner, and supper. But the main one would be, as I had previously mentioned, his main job will be at 7 bells, which is 11:30 in the forenoon, which will be to collect the rum.
Now, I'll come back to the food and the rum. What about the actual physical environment? So you've described the tables. What else about the mess? What was it like around you? Where did you put everything?
Where do you put everything? Well, you were allocated a locker which is not on the mess deck. That's why I never mentioned it. The lockers are on a locker compartment, if you call it that, and there would be the locker. Some lockers, which is like a metal encasement. I mean, I'm looking now at a television set of mine which is about that size, which doesn't mean a thing on a tape, but it would be about that size, which would be, 18 inches tall, 2 foot wide, probably?
2 foot six, yeah.
And 18 inches deep. That would be, some are on the mess deck. If you was fortunate enough, you was allocated one of them. Otherwise, you would be in the locker mess, or locker room, or whatever you care to call it. That is where all your gear will be stowed away, with the exception of your rifle and burn it. That is on the mess close at hand. The detachment, the Royal Marine Detachment, would then live on that mess deck.
You may have said, I misheard. Do you have bunks or hammocks? You'd be in bunks, wouldn't you?
Bunks were not invented in my day. It was hammocks.
And how did you take to the hammock? What did you think of it?
The best night's sleep you ever had.
What was so good? Can you describe the sort of hammock routine and why it was so good?
Well, on the deckhead, as you probably would recognise as being a ceiling, on the deckhead, every 18 inches on the crossbeams would be a hook. And the crossbeams would be... I don't know what the width would be, but it would be approximately 2 foot. Now, of an evening after supper, of an evening you're allowed to sling your hammock. And but doing that, you put one end of the clues, as it's called, on one hook. You would secure it. You would then go to a corresponding one opposite, which would be... roughly speaking, I'm going from memory now, it would be around about a good 10 to 12 foot apart. So now you've got your hammock slung up. Well, then when you do that, you then tighten one so the hammock itself is pretty well horizontal. Very, very close to the deckhead. Horizontal. You then make your bed. Now, with experience, there's only one way in which you can make a bed in a hammock, and that is you have a mattress in it, so-called. You have one blanket, and the blanket you lay into the hammock, so one edge of the blanket lays alongside the side of the hammock, the rest hanging over the other side, almost onto the deck. The second blanket, forget the sheet, the second blanket, you do it opposite. So you put that this side with that hanging down that side. Now it's getting into it is a matter of art. What you do, you then hang on to something on the deckhead and you swing yourself up. As you swing yourself up, you then plop yourself into the mick. The hammock. Now, before you settle down, you then bring one of the hanging down parts over, tuck it in, and you bring the other opposite side over, tuck it in. Now, it's impossible if you're restless, if you toss and turn and you turn this way, you pull this blanket over you. If you turn that way, that way. The most important thing in the hammock is the stretcher. Now the stretcher, incidentally, at the end of the hammock, you have the nettles. The nettles are, I'm not going to say string, but it's like cord. I believe, going from memory, there's a dozen cords going down, terminated at a ring at this end, where the rope that secures you to the hook. Now, the stretcher is a piece of wood which you determine what you want for comfort. There's a limit, obviously, but the average stretcher is about the width of your shoulders. You have a little notch either end, and with the stretcher, you put that string into the notch, that string into the notch, and now it's obvious your stretcher is in, not stretcher, your hammock is in open. And then you get in, you have a pillar, obviously, and then you're there, and of course, with the motion of the ship, well, the hammock's going, and it's the most beautiful night's sleep. I mean, that would be the, when they sound reveille in the morning, you have to get out quick, and you have to, stow your hammock away, put the bedclothes inside tidily, And then you have a cord, like a long length of rope, and you secure one end of the mick, and then you have seven, you go around the hammock seven times. There's various reasons why they say seven. Some say they are the victory of Nelson, some say this and some say that, but it's seven anyway. That is done, and it has to be done purposely, properly, because in the event of the boat being sunk or sinking, your hammock becomes your life raft. So then you have to get rid of it off the mess deck, and you go down to the hammock netting. The hammock netting is a metal enclosure about 8 to 10 foot square, and you stow your mick in there tidily. In the event of they're needed in a hurry, it's all right, because right above the hammock netting is a hatch. So if you were in a panic and you had to get them out quick, they would go straight up through the hatch.
So mick was a slang for hammocks?
Well, I mean, that's the expression as I did use before, that you automatically use it. You don't, if you want to be posh, you call it a hammock, but the general abbreviation is a mick. You call it a mick.
Now, what about, you mentioned the sort of system, the food, you know, the messing system. What system was it? Was it canteen messing, or was it the system where the cooks cook it and you just collect it? Canteen's where you actually prepare the food as well in your mess. But
well, they had a galley there. A galley is a kitchen, put it that way. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of the kitchen, except that there was ovens, there was fires, it was terrifically hot. But that is where all the food was cooked.
So you, the cook of the mess didn't help prepare it.
No,
they,
no.
They just collected it.
He just collected it.
So it was general messing.
Well, yes. I mean, you go there and you say, all right, mess 13. And then the duty cook behind the kitchen, he would then go to where they stack them up. And then they're in trays, big metal trays. And in there would be whatever, meat, and in the next one would be spuds, and you name it. And then you walk to the mess, and then you got upwards of a dozen men looking at you very hungrily, and then you was dished out. But there was never any trouble. I mean, the food was good.
Tell us what you get. What would you get, say, for breakfast, midday meal and
tea? That is virtually an impossible question to ask, because it depends on what part of the world you were in. I mean, by and large, generally speaking, yes, you would get porridge, eggs, not necessarily all on one menu, but eggs, porridge, bread, butter, or whatever they called it, bacon, sausages. I mean, I'm just memorising what we did have to eat. For a main meal, there would be vegetables. Then once again, depending what type of the world, what part of the world you was in, what vegetables you would have. But I would say, by and large, it was just a case of the normal food.
And you got enough of it?
Now, I would refer to the average man, yes, you would get enough. If you had a big appetite, you could always have a bit more. I mean, I personally speaking, the food I enjoyed, I had enough of. The food I didn't like, it went in the gash bin. The gash bin is a bucket in which you tip all the unwanted food and rubbish. Then you were told most politely to get off the mess. the cook would tell you to get off the mess, and I mean most politely would be a very good way of saying it. In other words, he would clear the mess. It is then his last duty would be to clean the mess. All the odds and ends off the table. We were allowed to smoke on the mess, so that was all right. Generally speaking, just to clear the mess so it's nice and tidy and clean, because you had to live there.
So the cook of the mess would fetch the food, and then when you'd eaten it, he'd tidy up after you, clean up after you.
Basically, that's it. Yeah.
Now tell me about the rum ration. How was that issued? You started before, but was that the cook of the mess's job as well, or who would do that?
As I said, the cook of the mess is responsible at approximately... Well, the Royal Marine Bugler will sound up spirits. And the moment that sounds on his bugle, everything on the ship virtually stops, apart from the duty people on watch and the gun's crew. He will then take the highly polished fanny, as I said, to wherever the rum is being dished out. There's no particular place for it, but where it's being dished out. When you go there, you will find either the duty sergeant of Royal Marines, or the sergeant major, the chief petty officer, and the John D, Master at Arms, will be there. Sometimes, invariably all the time, but not always, will be the officer of the watch. And then there will be the rum basin, which I actually have got out there. I've got one out there, the rum barrel, behind that armchair. The rum barrel is an oak carson. On it has got the Queen, God bless her, in brass, and the rum bosun, he is the man in charge of the rum. He would have known how many rum issues there will be for the ship's company.
It would be king then, of course. It would be the king then.
How do you mean?
You said it had God Save the Queen on it. It would have the king on then, wouldn't it?
Well, it depends. I mean, the one I've got out there has got God Save the Queen.
Yeah, but we're talking about
1944. Ah, we're talking in my days, obviously. Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously it'd be the God Save the King. But I'm referring to the one I've got out there, and it automatically comes to your mind. He would have been told that, yes, there's 1,000 men, tots. Now, he would know from his experience that 1,000 men would be, say, the equivalent of a dozen bottles of rum. I don't know for sure. I haven't a clue. So he would then tip the required amount of neat rum into the rum barrel. Then he would add the equivalent amount of water, which is 2 to 1, into the barrel. He would then stir it, and then the duty sergeant major or chief petty officer will then call out your mess number. And you would go up there and say, Royal Marines Mess 13. And you would say, I have 8 rums, 2 abstainers. And then he's got his measure. He would then measure it out. And he doesn't put his thumb over the top. If you put your thumb over the top of your measure, you get that amount less rum. So you have to keep your thumb out. So it's like that. And he would pour that into the fanny. You would then go to the mess, and there would be, say, 10 eyes looking at you. And there would be 10 mugs or whatever on the mess table. I'm saying 10, it may be a dozen, maybe 8, but I'm saying 10. And he has then got the job. He will then dish the rum out. Now, inside my rum barrel out there, I've got the measure, and he would have the measure, and he would hold it over the fanny, and he would have a glass or whatever, and he would then dip it in and pour it into the measure until it overflows. when it overflows, you know you can't get no more in, and it's full up. And then you would then put your mug over it, underneath it like that, and he would very, very gingerly chip it in, and not a drop is wasted. You know, he is a past master at it. And then you you sit down and say, you know, roll on the Navy. But if you've done someone a favour, or you've done me a favour, I don't know what, but you've done me a favour, well then you can have sippers of my rum.
And that's, what does that mean?
Well, as the name implies, sippers is, you sip it. And woe betide you if you take more than sippers, because you've got your eye on it, so you have sippers. Now, if it's your birthday or it's a special occasion, you then have gulpers. Now, it happened to be, it was my birthday when I was aboard the ship, and I had gulpers, and that goes all round the mess. Now, gulpers is as much as you can gulp down, but you don't take it all. I mean, you're not that stupid. You know what I mean? The person that's offered you the tot, I mean, you accept it. But after you've had, we'll say, 10 gulpers, you know it's... Well, all I know is, speaking from experience, is that they stowed me away for the afternoon, out of sight, you see. And then they looked after whatever. I wasn't on guns crew, I wasn't on watch. They stowed me out of sight. That doesn't occur often. Sippers, quite a lot. And then, as I say, once you've enjoyed your rum, it's a bit too early for lunch, or dinner as we called it. So you then disperse to your various jobs. That's all. That is the, and of course, if you have a make amend will be if you have the afternoon off.
So what would you do in a make amend?
Whatever you want to do. I mean, once again, as the name implies, a make amend goes right way back to the old sailing days of Nelson, etc., when you had to make your own clothing. And mend obviously means when you have to mend stuff, such as sails, but it's still known as make amend. Do what you want to do.
What would you do in the make amend?
Well, you see, it's very hard to say what I would do, because if I was on watch the previous day, or if I'd have had the forenoon watch, or the middle, I'd be dead tired. So you was allowed to sleep on a make amend. If you wanted to write letters, well, it was a leisure period. And unless you was actually wanted for something, like on watch or something like that, it was entirely your own affair what you'd done.
Now, when you first joined, Gurrock, wasn't it? Greenock. What was your first sort of days like? I mean, what would your duties be when you were on watch? You know, as opposed to, you've explained the watch system. I presume that's the same, but you've got cruising stations and watch stations and action stations. Can you describe what each of them was? I don't know which order.
There's one thing that has fascinated me. The expressions that you've sometimes used are really nautical. Now, you've just said there, which I haven't heard for a long while, offshore cruising station. Now, that's why I asked, I think, previous time, had you ever been in the service?
Just listen to sailors doing this.
I did guess that, you see. You see, if I can just run through them, I mean...
That would be great.
I mean, starting from the most obvious one, action stations.
Right. Now, action station, you were was that what you were on the 15-inch gun?
My action station was captain of the right gun X turret.
So we've done that because we
right. The next one would be offshore cruising station. Now that would be it wouldn't be the 15-inch, it would be the 6-inch, And my duty on that was the gun layer of P6. P6 is the port side 6th gun layer. Now we've got action stations.
Now tell me, we haven't actually done much about that, although you did mention a bit when we were doing the training. But tell me, what was your role as gun layer, and what would happen? I mean, that's not when you're planning to go in action, but you just, what would you do during a cruising station period on that, on P6?
What would you do? Well, to start at the beginning, you've got the gun and it's sticking out the side of the ship.
Right.
At the barrel end, I wasn't say what we called it, but at the barrel, the breech end, on either side of the gun, you had two metal seats. The gun layer on the left, the trainer on the right. Now, when you was offshore cruising stations, you was closed up around the gun. You wasn't permanently glued to that seat, but you had to be in the very, very close proximity of the gun. So if the alarm sounded, well, then you was wherever you had to be, which would be the gun rail on the left, the trainer on the right, the breech worker where the breech is, obviously, and the loaders at the rear of the casement. It's not known as a turret. It's known as a casement. That would be until such times as they sounded like, well, I say off clear, which means you then release yourself. So you then close down, put it that way. And they cleared the offshore closing. Then the other one for the 4-inch, that was also offshore, but it wasn't known on my ship as offshore cruising stations. It was just the ACAT close up. The 4-inch turrets close up. Now the 4-inch, you had two on the port side, twin turrets, and two on the starboard side, twin turrets. Now once again, while you were just cruising along, you would be closed up round the gun. You, under no circumstances were you allowed to sleep. You could stand there. You wasn't allowed to smoke. You just had to stay there, closed up. If you was appointed part of the gun's crew of a pom-pom or an oricon, well, then you just stayed near the gun as possible. And that was it.
Now, if you're on your cruising, to one of those cruising stations, and an action station to recall, would you then go to the X-turret? Or would you stay where you were? I'm a bit confused about that.
Well, all right, you're steaming along. And you're closed up offshore stations. And then all of a sudden, on the horizon, what do you see? You see the enemy, put it that way. Well, then they would immediately sound action stations. Well, then you would clear the 6-inch and you would go to the turret. There would be another crew. You see, I was in the port watch. You then had the starboard watch. Well, then if I had to vacate the 6-inch offshore cruising stations to go to the action station's X turret, then my position on the 6-inch will be taken over by the starboard watch. Oh, they had it manned at all times. Oh, yeah.